This is what it sounds like during lunchtime at Carbondale Community High School. No, we're just joking. This isn't cereal. This doesn't even have the same theme as that. This is lunch table. As students, we spend a lot of time in the lunchroom. A lot of time. Every year since we started school, we spent 30 minutes to an hour in there, every day, save weekends and holidays. And it's no surprise that lunchtime makes up a huge amount of our social life during the school year, and as such, has an equally huge impact on our personalities and our friendships. We see it every day at our own lunch table. Our closest friends are the ones that we eat lunch with. The majority of the social structures and cliques can be defined by where you sit and who you sit with. So what can we find out about the way we interact from our lunch tables? Over the last few weeks, we set out to find that answer.
And like,
and it's like 87 pounds.
Why did I think about piss?
I don't know.
It could have just been like water or something.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about the smell. It's so bad.
That was recorded at a table in our lunchroom. We followed this table for about 2 weeks, as well as two other lunchroom tables.
It's one torso length away.
I guess there's no fish in the sea today.
You picked the worst table to do this podcast on.
We wanted to find what similarities there were among different tables. We've been looking at the table dynamic and how every person can contribute to the atmosphere of a table. We also wanted to find the extent of how integral social structures are in the lunchroom and how they may affect our day-to-day conversations. To find out, my producers and I decided we needed to immerse ourselves in the various table cultures in the lunchroom. We split ourselves up among the three tables so we could get a broader understanding of trends across the lunchroom. The clip you heard earlier was from the first table. You can hear the tone of the table. Pretty goofy. Not exactly the most serious table. It's made of all boys who are pretty close friends. The table is all seniors except for one junior. It was odd being the only sophomore squished in between upperclassmen at an already packed table, but I did my best not to interfere with the table dynamic. As researchers, we found this to be integral at other tables as well. The second table we spent time at was another group of senior boys. While recording at the other tables, we often have problems with our recording devices maxing out on sound. At this table, however, we were more worried about the table being too quiet. It doesn't mean there wasn't lively discussion. The boys there are just not the yelling type, and are extremely organized in their discussion, whether they realize it or not. They take turns speaking, and even have a little tradition they do called story time, where one person gets the floor and reads, shall we say, contemporary literature to the group.
Should we read some Spider-Man fan fiction today, boys?
The third and final table we studied was a popular table, made up of juniors and seniors, as well as both boys and girls. This table was a little more difficult to study. Because of the popularity of the group, a lot of people came and went throughout the period, making the social structure more unclear than the previous tables. However, after examining them over a couple of days, their trends and patterns emerged just like the other two tables. We noticed that the conversations at these tables were constantly evolving. The conversation would geographically shift from one side of the table to the other throughout the whole period. We can't show you this process. The shift in the conversation is natural, and so slow that you often don't even see it. But from an outsider's perspective, it's quite noticeable. Think about it yourself. It might not be prevalent, but once you notice, it's always there.
You feel that there's a social structure in your group of friends and or at your table?
Sort of. There's basically two groups of people that talk amongst themselves, two groups of four, or five and four.
Do they ever come together?
They overlap sometimes. But a lot of times they break off and have their own conversations.
That clip was from David. We're leaving last names out to preserve our peers' privacy. It makes sense that these two distinct conversations will develop. The tables are long and rectangular, so it's hard for people on one side of the table to talk to the other side. As such, we found this trend occurs at the other two tables my producers and I researched. This made me curious. What else was the same everywhere we looked?
So do you feel that there's a social structure in your group of friends and at your table? What's the extent of it?
Yes, I think that we all play different roles at our table.
Oh yeah, I definitely play a role.
I think my role is pretty important.
Everybody plays a role. We found that at every table, you could find the same basic combinations of people. No matter how different the groups were, there was still a distinct set of roles that everyone could be classified as. But why? How is this possible? Helene Deutsch, a mid-century psychologist, proposed an answer to this. She found, and I quote, "Interaction is particularly important when it's accompanied by interdependence, the extent to which the group members are mutually dependent upon each other to reach a goal." The example she gives is a game of baseball. On a baseball team, the goal of the group is to score more runs than the other team. This is a simple goal, but it takes many positions to accomplish it. In the sport of baseball, the roles people play are easy to see, like the catcher, the pitcher, and your outfielders. However, Helene Deutsch asserts that just like in baseball, every group has certain roles that need to be filled. At a lunch table, the goal is abstract. It's to have fun. So it's no surprise that the roles people fill aren't quite as well defined. That doesn't mean they're not there.
Do you feel that there's a social structure in your group of friends and or at your table? What's the extent of it?
I would say there's like a little social structure. It's a little bit confusing though. Very complex, but simple.
Could you try to explain it a little bit?
Well, we always got like our assigned seating type ordeal, but we never actually, it's not spoken. It's just kind of assumed. And that's how most of the things are at our table. So like you don't take Isaiah's food.
Yeah.
Like that's big rule. Never take his food. However, Ethan's Cheez-Its are always on the board. So you never really know.
That was from a student named Chancellor. He sits at one of the more chaotic tables. So we were surprised he could see these roles, even at his table. We took notes on how each person at all three tables interacted with the group as a whole. The most distinct roles we could find were based on how people affected the conversation. We found four roles at each table, and one that was a little different. Starters, drivers, contributors, and flies on the wall. You can laugh, the names are a little goofy, but I think you'll find that they make a lot of sense. The first role is the conversation starter. This is someone who is constantly starting new conversations or changing the conversation that is happening. This is usually the spaz of the group, somebody whose mind isn't going to focus on one thing for the whole lunch period. The best example we could find for this was a boy named Ethan. Ethan wanted us to use his full name to garner him more fame, but my producers and I decided to leave it out to protect him from himself.
Gluten. Oh, I love gluten in my system.
Do I do ASMR for your podcast?
Nope.
Well, I want to be a TikTok star.
As you can see, Ethan's yo-yo type of personality is what keeps the conversation constantly evolving. This person is absolutely integral. Without them, the conversations can become boring and stagnant. No matter how social a group is, it's difficult to stay on one topic for half an hour. So, it's up to the conversation starter to pivot the topic of focus. This pivot of focus is driven by the conversation starter's boredom. Let's say, for instance, that the table has been focusing on tax laws in Illinois for the last 5 minutes. The conversation starter, despite probably being the one who brought it up, will quickly become bored with this topic and instead bring up the state of the fruit industry. It is important to acknowledge that when the conversation starter does this, they are not usually being intentional. Their mind simply wanders if not fully engaged. The second role is the conversation driver. This person is almost the inverse of the conversation starter. The driver takes the topics that the starter brings up and does exactly what their name says. They constantly add points to the topic and become the primary speaker in the discussion. One example of this is Dylan.
When you're listening to a conversation, do you feel like you add extra stuff, like the jokes add points?
Oh, most certainly, all the time.
There is usually not more than one of these at each table, and if you're wondering who the conversation driver is, a good rule of thumb is it's whoever talks the most. Both the starter and the driver exist to prevent stagnant conversations. However, it's very important to recognize the difference of personality between a starter and a driver, as well as how they prevent boring conversation. While both are extroverted and talk a lot, the driver stays focused on one topic and typically doesn't stray far from it unless prompted by the conversation starter. Often, there is even an unspoken struggle between the starter and the driver, and this is what ultimately keeps lunchtime lively. The third role is the conversation contributor. This person isn't one to bring up new points within a topic, but often responds and adds his or her opinion. This is the most common role you can find at these tables. They're an active part of the conversation, but they're not the active part of the conversation. It's easy to overlook these people, but collectively, they're the most powerful group. Every time the driver and starter are pushing for separate trains of thought, the contributors will either add to the driver or starter's ideas. Whichever one they contribute to more will typically be the one that is carried out. If you're wondering what role you are, you're probably a conversation contributor. The fourth role is the fly on the wall. These people tend to stay out of the conversation or are only really in contact with one or two other people. You can usually find them sitting at the end of the table, either on their phone, reading a book, or just listening in on the conversation happening around them.
What kind of fish do you want?
An octopus.
Hey, you know how octopuses are rare? They're not all over the place. I mean,
shark.
Yeah,
give me a decapus.
Octopus?
No decapus.
Try.
Can I get a school of fish?
Throughout researching, we noticed that while the conversation starter begins most new topics, the new topic can come from the flies on the wall. Oftentimes, small side conversations between other roles and flies on the wall morph into larger ones, eventually becoming the primary topic at the table. A good analogy for flies on the wall is a small business incubator. People will start small conversations with them because it's easier to talk to them than the whole table, and if the conversation is good, more contributors, as well as the driver and the starter, will quote-unquote invest in the idea until it can make it big, or in other words, become the main talking point. This is a beneficial counter to the starter and allows anyone at the table to shape lunchroom discussion. The final role, which is a little different from the others, is the roamer. This is someone who sits at a table for a good amount of the lunch period, but will often get up and explore to different tables. At other tables, they fill into one of the previous four roles. For instance, Adam is normally a conversation starter. He's random and eccentric and won't stay on one topic very long. However, we could hardly identify what his table even was.
I also do walk around a lot. That I notice. I'm never in one place. Like, I don't know how to explain that. I think that's due to my ADHD. I just like walk around constantly, but it's a good time.
Adam essentially table hops all across the lunchroom in short intervals. At whatever table he arrives at, he continues to be a conversation starter. This often causes a disruption in the table dynamic. There will often be a discordance between him and the current conversation starter. This disruption is not necessarily a bad thing at all, only different. However, eventually the roamer will leave, and the table will return back to its natural roles. The interaction between these four roles can be summed up by one sentence. The conversation starter brings up something randomly, the conversation driver takes control of the topic, and keeps it going as the conversation contributors provide feedback. All the while, the flies on the wall are observing. This structure can be found at most lunch tables, as well as most group social interactions. Put simply, every group needs a diverse set of personalities to function. No matter how quiet or loud, spazzy or stoic, every type of person is necessary for the lunch table to fully achieve its goal, to have fun. Thank you for listening to Lunch Table. I'm Max Johnson on narration, we have Nathaniel Pimentel on script writing, and Charlie Dew on editing.
What up?